Back on downtown. Yeah, looking out the window. It's dark already, Carrie. What is up with this? Well, you know, it wouldn't be dark if people had listened. Well, maybe it would be. If people had listened to our next guest, he is a certified Maine broadcast legend. He's a Hall of Famer. He's the host of Bill Green's Maine, The Green Outdoors on News Center, and he's getting ready to hang up the microphone. Bill Green joins us. Bill, welcome. And you could have fixed all this with your plan to adjust the time zone, right?
Well, you know, it's complicated. We'll leave it at that. But I'm good. I'm more concerned with light in summer. So
yes.
I don't care too much about the winter because it's only 9 hours of light. And I think the kids, they say that the kids getting on buses in the daylight is much safer. So I kind of like what we have now, but I'd actually like to go 2 hours ahead in the summer.
I would be all for that, definitely.
I'm not the king. I'm just the guy who works at a TV station.
But only for a few weeks longer. You're a young man. You're at the top of the game. Why now to walk away from it all?
Well, I'm not a young man, and I'm not necessarily at the top of my game. I think I'm doing all right, but I think I'd like it to have my career to have an end. And, you know, a beginning and a middle and an end. And some of the stuff, you know, I told an anecdote the other day about I was climbing ice last winter, and it wasn't a very steep piece of ice. And I can climb ice okay, and I've done a little bit of it. And I'm thinking, don't fall because the kids are coming over with their spouses tomorrow. And if you slide down here and break your hip, you know, you'll ruin a family dinner the next day. So I climbed very slowly, very deliberately, which you should do, but I was also thinking, nobody wants to watch this. So it's just increasingly things like that. No, nobody wants to watch a 66-year-old guy with a towel down the side of the casino. You know, it's bizarre. So, you know, get out of the way.
Well, that's the end coming up in a few weeks. Well, let's go back to the beginning. You were, what, 18 years old when you started at WLBZ-TV?
Yep. I heard they were looking for a studio cameraman. And the pay was horrible. It was $1.70 an hour, which was minimum wage. And I thought, Hollywood. Oh, my goodness. I was with a kid named Scott Ames. We were looking for jobs like loading trucks. And this was not my style. But I said, Scott, could I apply for that job alone? I really want it. And normally I would have stepped aside. But I just, you know, something about that job, I just wanted it. And a guy named John Bonadio, who's still, I believe, doing some real estate and some things up there, was the production director. And he said, you know, the interview was pitiful. You know, he's, well, have you ever shot any film? You know, I'm 18, right? I'm wearing, you know, flare pants and dingo boots, you know. Well, my father has a whole movie camera, yeah. So, but, you know, I mean, you know, and John taught me a lot. He was the first of many people to teach me a lot. And we had lunch the other day. We're still friends, and despite what I put him through. And, you know, it just was a fun, you know what it's like, fun, creative, energetic thing. And I walked in the door, and there in the studio is Eddie Driscoll. I'm telling you, Mr. Man, that was a thrill.
Well, yeah, and you've worked with so many great people through the years, and I had the opportunity to work with Ed for about a year before his retirement, but you were with him for a long time. And for people who only remember him from TV, or it hurts me to say this, but people today, young people who don't know who he is, for my money, there's never been a more unique person on the airwaves in the state of Maine than Eddie Driscoll.
Yeah, and, you know, he was really... we were lucky to have him because he should have been in Hollywood. And I remember Milton Berle, the king of television, was coming to Lakewood Theater, you know, I don't know when, somewhere between in the 70s. And Eddie wanted to meet him. So Eddie dragged along with the news guys, which was me, and I think there were maybe four of us that day. And they did a little repartee together, and Eddie was funnier than Milton Berle, and he was a lot funnier than Milton Berle. It was painfully obvious. And, you know, Milton Berle was, had been in the 50s and 60s the king of television. But Eddie could dance, he could sing, he could, you know, he'd do characters, he could do puppeteers, and, you know, he could just do it all. And he had great timing, and he's a great one. He was really, and we've got a few minutes of, you know, videotape of Eddie, but, you know, it's all mostly gone and just memories. And some of the things he said, I mean, his sense of humor, he was just dropped. Yeah, it's
And along with Ruby, made all those great puppets from Mason, yep. Mutt, you name it. They were all concocted, yep. right in the basement of his house.
Yep. And he could do, you know, children's TV. Of course, all of television was pretty primitive then. But when you think back about what he was doing compared to, say, Captain Kangaroo, who became a wealthy legend, you know, Eddie was just as good. He was better, I think. And, in fact, there's no doubt about it. And it's just, you know, when you're in Bangor, especially at that time, you're unknown and unheralded. But the wife and a couple of kids, he's not going to leave for L.A., but I think that he could have been a superstar. I think he was just the most talented individual I ever worked with.
Now when you started on the air doing sports, and you started a little bit before I did you have a teleprompter?
Mm-mm. No, and I was probably better without a teleprompter. The problem I had, I couldn't produce a show, which means you, to the people listening, you write out what you're going to say and you indicate to the director when you're going to ask for a certain tape or a certain piece of video or slides going to change behind you or something. And so I couldn't do them the same way twice. You know? So I had, I think, a lot of information. You probably have a better impression of how I did than I did, than I do. But, I mean, I would, you know, it's 11:20 and I'm going to be on in 2 minutes and I'm calling Central America to find out how Dan Turbine did in the Pan Am shot put, you know, and the guy's speaking Spanish, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, and rather than put on a nice, clean, neat sportscast that, you know, with all the, do you remember Bill Patrick?
Oh, yeah, Bill's a good friend of ours, still comes on the show.
He looks great. I see him on the network, and his stuff is just always perfect, you know, and I was the guy on the other channel, and I, you know, there somebody found an old show the other day where I didn't know the score of, like, the Bucksport game, but I called the pizzeria, and they said that Bucksport won, and I reported that. You know, so if you wanted to know who, if Bucksport won, watch me, but it was just a horror show.
Did you have film or videotape when you started?
Well, way back when I was 18, we had black and white, you know, hand-crank Bolex cameras, and they would send me up to the university on Saturday because we didn't have news, and I'd shoot highlights of the game, and it was a thrill to stand on the sideline and shoot film of those teams, and if anything came out, they put it on the news Monday night at 6. And sometimes it just didn't come out. I'd done something wrong. You know, I remember one time it had a little turret lens with three different, like a 28mm, a 50mm, and a 120mm lens on it. I'd switched them, and the viewfinder was parallax. It was parallel to the lens of the camera. So I'd taken the top off the camera, put the film in, and somehow turned that viewfinder. So I'm looking. I'm thinking I'm wide angle. I'm seeing wide angle, but I'm shooting telephoto. And I got like a close up of Jack Cosgrove's butt, you know. You know, oops, all right, we won't do that. But you know, it was great fun. And we went to Nobody Cares, which we went to Super 8 color film to go color. I think Channel 2 was the last station in the country to go color. And we only had that format for 3 or 4 months. And then we went to 16mm film. And in September of 80, I believe, we went to videotape.
We're talking with Bill Green here on Downtown. I wanted to ask you about the move into covering the outdoors in Maine, which was so significant for you and for the viewers around the state as well. What led you to that?
Bud, when I grew up reading the Bangor Daily News, and the Red Sox game was here, and the Patriots game was there, and Bud Levitt was fishing here and telling stories about drinking stump blower and, you know, down to camp. And so when I got on the sports, I thought I was supposed to cover the outdoors. And so two things happened. I was trying to do a little bit of outdoor coverage, and the running boom hit. And so even though I was a slow runner, I ran 100 road races, and that kind of led to paddling. And it just, you know, just any kind of outdoor sport I tried to put in my sportscast. And as it turned out, probably because, you know, one night I pulled up the baseball scores at the end of the sportscast to read the scores. And I read two or three scores, and I went, oh, these are last night's scores. And so I used an Eddie Driscoll technique. I took the wire copy, crinkled it into a ball, and threw it over my shoulder. And Lee Monville says, that's the best sportscast he's ever seen. But, you know, so therefore my feature stories were probably better than my sportscast, and the management kind of recognized that. They kind of thought, you know, recreational sports was where it's at. So I started, you know, doing more and more recreational sports stories, what we call recreation and outdoor sports, and which is really, we do a little hunting and fishing, but we're not, you know, taking kill shots like the old ESPN Saturday morning thing. Right. We're just kind of like, I'll have a story about deer hunting season tomorrow, and it'll just be me and three buddies walking around in the woods out behind my friend's house, and an interview with a game warden and a biologist, you know, with kind of some things that are happening. And so, you know, it's not, you know, hardcore bobcat hunting like Gene Letourneau used to do and stuff. Gene wrote for the Press Herald, the Waterville paper, was a deer guy. But mine says, in terms of outdoors, it's kind of soft. But in terms of recreation, you know, biathlon and, you know, up north and, you know, skiing, you know, obviously big. And, you know, we covered a lot of canoeing and, you know, sailing and whatever, you know, whatever there's been. And as Bud said one time, but I think it's true, the big time opportunity in Maine outdoor, I mean, Maine sports is outdoors. And, you know, you've got a lot of Olympians going and, you know, there's an awful lot to do here. The Appalachian Trail and the Maine Hudson Trails and the Allagash Wilderness and the just the coastal waters and everything else, the rivers and lakes and blah, blah, blah. But it's really a great, diverse place for people who enjoy outdoor activities.
Well, and then you put together what, for my money, is one of the great local programs that's ever aired around here, Bill Green's Maine, the work that you've done traveling the state, introducing us to so many incredible, fascinating people, sharing your love and your knowledge of history. You just put it all together in that program, Bill.
Well, thank you. When Gannett, which is not related to Guy Gannett Newspapers of Portland, they were actually second cousins in like 1890. When that company bought the Maine radio and TV company from the Rhines-Thompson family, we were their smallest property of about 27. They've now spun off a company called Tegna, and we're one of about 60 stations for a big corporation. But they wanted to look local with this station that they had bought, and they thought they'd do a local show. And so the guy who was the station manager at the time, Steve Thaxton, had done a local show in Minnesota as a producer type of guy, as an executive. And, you know, they were looking around who's available, and I was, you know, the person, that, because then I was just doing features. I was married. I had a couple of kids. I moved to Portland to do weekend sports on both stations from 81 to 93. And that became kind of a black hole. Bruce Glazer was in front of me at Channel 6, and Dale had taken over Channel 2. And, you know, I was locked into weekends. And I worked 12 years of weekends. I got married, had a couple of kids in that time, but I wasn't going to go anywhere. And so, you know, I got off weekend sports to do just features. And that's an expendable position. I mean, you know, being a feature reporter, right. But it was going pretty well, and the thing was booming. And so I was available to do the show, and Steve created the outline for it, you know, the way it works that we still use, and came up with a jingle, which I'm embarrassed to say was written by a friend of his in Minnesota who owed him a favor. And the name of the song is, it doesn't have a name, but I call it the Bill Green's Maine theme song, but it was written for that show. And the big open that we got, we kind of copied it from a Yves Saint Laurent ad that was on at that time. And, you know, and we were off, and it went very well.
Yeah, it's gone very well indeed, and I've told you before, I've used more than a few episodes in my teaching career to share some of your great stories about the state of Maine. You've done pretty well for a Chapin Park kid, Bill.
How about that, huh? Anyway, you know, but, you know, when you think of it, I mean, John Baldacci did pretty well for a Chapin Park kid.
Yes, he did.
Mark Miller, a friend of mine from Garland Street, is like a, you know, like a mural something researcher in Puerto Rico, you know, and I mean, all these kids that we grew up with, just average kids, you know, but, you know, what a great place to grow up. And I think that the educational system were outstanding, and, you know, for, you know, I think public schools have an important role to play. And for an awful lot of my friends who did pretty well, darn it, I think that the Bangor school system and Brewer systems and all the systems, I think they did a good job. We put a big task on them, and I think I had every opportunity. And I was listening to you guys on Saturday. You know, I had one chance to go to college, you know, Maine. I, you know, walk down the road and go to the local land grant. And, you know, I mean, I was blessed. I'm so grateful to the University of Maine. And, you know, I had, and in fact, Ed Gerringer was a station manager. He was a Harvard graduate. And he appreciated the fact that I was working full time and going to school. And so he gave me a chance to be on the air. And so I was able to form a very lovely life because of, you know, all the support I got and all the things that were in place. You know, things like the Bangor Y with John Coombs and Bangor Parks, you know, with park directors like Billy Pigeon and Andrea Eaton. And did you go to any of the parks when you were a kid?
Oh, I did. I was a Chapin Park kid. You were a legend because, you know, you're a few years older than me. I mean, you were already a park legend by the time I started hanging out there.
For all the wrong reasons, Rick. I didn't know you there, but I didn't know. I was a daily kid down there.
Oh, yeah.
I could go to the park. Yeah.
Loved it. Well, Bill, congratulations on just a phenomenal career, the great work you've done ever since you started those 47 or so years ago. Yep. We wish you much success with the next stage and all the great things you've got lined up. And hopefully we'll catch up with you. You can report back to us on Retired Life.
That sounds great to me, Rich. And I just want to say what a great job you and Bob do. Every Saturday I'm listening, and go Bears.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Bill. Good luck.
All right, guys. Talk to you.
That's Bill Green here on Downtown.